my gaze a long moment, but her expression was so impassive I doubted I'd made her think twice. The only person Marcy could ever empathize with was herself. After class, I found V in the parking lot. She was splayed across the hood of the Neon, sleeves rolled above her shoulders, tanning. "We need to talk," she said as I approached. She pulled herself up to sitting and lowered her sunglasses down her nose far enough to make eye contact. "You and Patch are Splitsville, aren't you?" I climbed onto the hood beside her. "Who told?" "Rixon. For the record, that hurt. I'm your best friend. I shouldn't have to find these things out through the friend of a friend, or through the friend of an ex-boyfriend," she added, after thinking it all through. She laid a hand on my shoulder and squeezed. "How are you holding up?" "Not especially well, but it was one of those things I was trying to bury at the bottom of my heart, and I couldn't keep it buried if I talked about it." I eased back against the windshield, raising my notebook to shield the sun. "You know what the worst part is? That I was right all along, and now you have to suffer through hearing me say, 'I told you so'? Funny. It's no secret Patch's trouble. He's got the whole bad boy in need of redemption thing going on. But the catch is, most bad boys don't want redemption. They like being bad. They like the power they get from striking fear and panic into the hearts of mothers everywhere." That was insightful. "Anytime, babe. And what's more, V," she flapped her arms, "hear me out. I'm saving the best for last. I think this is the time to rethink your priorities when it comes to guys. What we need is to find you a nice Boy Scout who'll make you appreciate the value of having a good man in your life. Take Rixon, for example." I nailed her with a "you've got to be kidding" look. "I resent that look," V said. "Rixon happens to be a really decent guy." We stared at each other for 3 more counts. "Okay, so maybe Boy Scout is stretching it," V said. "But the point of all this is that you could benefit from a nice guy. A guy whose closet isn't solely black. What's up with that anyway? Does Patch think he's a commando?" "I saw Marcy and Patch together last night," I said on a sigh. There, it was out. V blinked a few times, digesting this. "What?" she said, her jaw going slack. I nodded. "I saw them. She had her arms wrapped around him. They were together at a pool hall in Springvale." "You followed them?" I wanted to say, "Give me some credit," but managed only a flat. "Scott invited me to play pool. I went with him, and we ran into them there." I wanted to tell V everything that had happened after that moment. But as with Marcy, there were some things I couldn't explain to her. How was I supposed to tell her about the Nafil in the red shirt, or how he'd rammed a pool stick through the table? V looked like she was scrambling for a response. "Well, like I was saying, once you see the light, you'll never turn back. Maybe Rixon has a friend. Other than Patch, that is." She trailed off awkwardly. "I don't need a boyfriend. I need a job." V did a full-on grimace. "More job talk? Ugh. I just don't get the allure." "I need a car, and in order to get one, I need money. Hence, the job." I had a running list of reasons to buy the Volkswagen Cabriolet lined up in my mind. The car was small, and therefore easy to park, and it was fuel-efficient. A bonus, considering I wasn't going to have much money for gas after forking over $1,000 for the car itself. And while I knew it was ridiculous to feel a connection to something as inanimate and practical as a car, I was beginning to view it as a metaphor of change in my life. Freedom to go wherever I wanted, whenever. Freedom to start fresh. Freedom from Patch and all the memories we shared that I hadn't yet figured out how to slam the door on. "My mom is friends with one of the night managers at Enzo's, and they're looking for baristas," V suggested. "I don't know anything about being a barista." V shrugged. "You make coffee. You pour it. You carry it to the eager little customers. How hard could it be?" 45 minutes later, V and I were at the shore, walking the boardwalk, putting off our homework, and noncommittally glancing in storefront windows. Since neither of us had a job and consequently no money, we were brushing up on our window shopping skills. We reached the end of the walk and our eyes fell on a bakery, I could practically hear V's mouth watering as she pressed her face to the glass and gazed in at the donut case. "I think it's been a whole hour since I last ate," she said. "Glazed donuts, here we come, my treat." She was four steps ahead, tugging on the doors. "I thought you were trying to lose weight for swimsuit season. I thought you were big-boned and wanted to even things out with Rickson. You sure know how to ruin the mood. Anyway, how's one little donut going to hurt?" I had never seen V eat just one donut, but I kept my mouth shut. We placed an order for a half dozen glazed and had just taken a seat at a table near the windows when I saw Scott on the other side of the glass. He had his forehead mashed against the window, and he was smiling. At me. Startled, I jumped an inch. He crooked a finger, beckoning me outside. "I'll be right back," I told V. She followed my gaze. "Isn't that Scotty the Hottie?" "Stop calling him that. What happened to Scotty the Potty?" "He grew up. What does he want to talk to you for?" Something of a revelation crossed her face. "Oh, no, you don't. You are not allowed to play rebound with him. He's trouble. You said so yourself. We're going to find you a nice Boy Scout, remember?" I hooked my handbag over my shoulder. "I'm not playing rebound." "What?" I said in response to the look she was giving me. "You expect me to just sit here and ignore him?" She flipped her palms up. "Just hurry up or your donut is going to make the endangered species list." Outside, I rounded the corner and walked back to where I'd last seen Scott. He was lounging against the seat back of a sidewalk bench, thumbs slung in his pockets.
"You survived last night?" he asked.
"I'm still here, aren't I?" he smiled.
"A little more excitement than you're used to."
I didn't remind him that he was the one who'd been stretched out on the pool table with a pool stick drilled 1 inch from his ear.
"Sorry I left you hanging," Scott said. "Looks like you found your own ride home."
"Don't worry about it," I said testily, not going to the trouble of hiding my annoyance. "It just taught me never to go out with you again."
"I'll make it up to you. Got time for a quick bite?"
He hitched his thumb toward a touristy restaurant down the boardwalk. Alfio's. I'd eaten there years ago with my dad, and remembered the menu as pricey. The only thing I was going to get for under $5 was water. A Coke if I was lucky. Taking into consideration the exorbitant prices and the company, after all, my last memory of Scott was of him trying to tease my shirt up with a pool stick, I wanted nothing more than to go finish my donut. "Can't. I'm here with V," I told Scott. "What happened at the Z last night, after I left?"
"I got my money back."
Something about the way he said it left me thinking it hadn't been quite that simple. "Our money," I corrected.
"I've got your half at home," he said vaguely. "I'll drop it by tonight."
Yeah, right. I had a feeling he'd already blown all the money, and then some. "And the guy in the red shirt?" I asked.
"He got away."
"He seemed really strong. Did he seem that way to you? Something about him was different." I was testing him, trying to figure out how much he knew, but his only comment was a distracted,
"Yeah, I guess. So my mom keeps harping on me to get out there and make new friends. No offense, Gray, but you're not one of the guys. Sooner or later, I'm going to have to branch out. Aw, don't cry. Just remember all the happy moments we've shared together, and I'm sure you'll be comforted."
"You dragged me out here to break off our friendship? How did I get so lucky?" Scott laughed.
"I thought I'd start with your boyfriend. He got a name? I'm beginning to think he's your imaginary friend. I mean, I never see the two of you together."
"We broke up." Something that resembled a twisted smile crept over his face.
"Yeah, that's what I heard, but I wanted to see if you'd cop to it."
"You heard about me and Patch?"
"Some hot chick named Marcy told me. I ran into her at the gas station, and she made sure to come over and introduce herself. By the way, she said you're a loser."
"Marcy told you about me and Patch?" My spine stiffened.
"Want some advice? Some genuine guy-to-girl advice? Forget Patch. Move on. Find some guy who's into the same stuff you are. Studying, chess, collecting and classifying dead bugs. And give some serious thought to dyeing your hair."
"Excuse me?" Scott coughed into his fist, but I didn't miss that it was to cover up a smile.
"Let's be honest. Redheads are a liability."
I narrowed my eyes. "I don't have red hair." He
He was full on grinning.
Could be worse. Could be orange. Wicked Witch Orange.
Are you this big of a jerk to everyone? Because this is why you don't have friends.
A little rough around the edges is all.
I pushed my sunglasses to the top of my head and made direct eye contact. For the record, I don't play chess and I don't collect insects.
But you study. I know you do. I know the type.
The hallmark of your entire persona is defined by two words. Anal, retentive.
You're just another standard OCD case.
My mouth fell open. Okay, so maybe I study a little, but I'm not boring. Not that boring. At least I hoped not. Obviously, you don't know me at all.
Right.
Fine, I said defensively. What's something you're interested in that you think I'd never go for? Stop laughing, I'm serious. Name one thing. Scott scratched his ear.
Ever gone to Battle of the Bands? Loud, unrehearsed music. Loud, unruly crowds. Lots of scandalous sex in the bathrooms. 10 times more adrenaline than the Z.
No, I said a little hesitantly.
I'll pick you up Sunday night. Bring fake ID.
His eyebrows arched, and he graced me with an egotistical, mocking smile. No problem, I said, trying to keep my expression ho-hum. Technically, I'd be eating my words if I went out with Scott again, but I wasn't going to stand here and let him call me boring, and I definitely wasn't going to let him call me a redhead. What should I wear?
As little as legally allowable.
I nearly choked. I didn't know you were big into bands, I said once I'd recovered my breath.
I played bass back in Portland for a band called Geezer. I'm hoping to get picked up by someone local. The plan is to scout talent Sunday night.
Sounds like fun, I lied. Count me in. I could always back out later. A quick text would take care of it. All I cared about currently was not allowing Scott to call me an anal-retentive wimp to my face. Scott and I parted ways, and I found V waiting at our table, half my donut eaten. Don't say I didn't warn you, she said, watching my eyes travel to my donut. What did Scotty want? He invited me to Battle of the Bands. Oh, boy. For the last time, I am not on the rebound. Whatever you say. Nora Gray. V and I looked up to find one of the bakery employees standing over our table. Her work uniform consisted of a lavender polo and a matching lavender name tag that read Madeline. Excuse me, are you Nora Gray? She asked me a second time. Yes, I said, trying to figure out how she knew my name. She was clutching a manila envelope to her chest, and now she held it out to me. This is for you. What is it? I asked, accepting the envelope. She shrugged. A guy just came in and asked me to give it to you. What guy? V asked, craning her neck around the bakery. He already left. He said it was important that Nora get the envelope. I thought maybe he was your boyfriend. One time, a guy had flowers delivered here and told us to give them to his girlfriend. She was at the table in the back corner. She pointed and smiled. I still remember. I slid my finger under the seal and glanced inside. There was a sheet of paper along with a large ring. Nothing else. I looked up at Madeline, who had a dusting of flour smeared across her cheek. Are you sure this is for me? The guy pointed right at you and said, give this to Nora Gray. You're Nora Gray, aren't you? I started to reach inside the envelope, but V put her hand on mine. No offense, she told Madeline, but we'd like a little privacy. Who do you think it's from? I asked V, once Madeline was out of earshot. I don't know, but I got goosebumps when she gave it to you. At V's words, cold fingers walked down my spine, too. Do you think it was Scott? I don't know. What's inside the envelope? She slid into the chair directly beside mine for a closer look. I pulled the ring out and we inspected it in silence. I could tell just by looking at it that it would be loose on my thumb. Definitely a man's ring. It was made of iron, and the crown of the ring, where the stone typically sat, had a raised stamp of a hand. The hand was squeezed into a tight, menacing fist. The crown of the ring was charred black and appeared to have been lit on fire at some point. What the? V began. She stopped when I pulled out the paper. Scrawled in black Sharpie was a note. This ring belongs to the Black Hand. He killed your dad. Chapter 8 V was out of her chair first.
I chased her to the bakery doors where we rushed out to blinding sunshine. Shielding our eyes, we looked both ways down the boardwalk. We jogged down to the sand and did the same thing. People were scattered all over the beach, but I didn't see one familiar face. My heart was pounding, and I asked V, "Do you think it was a joke?" "I'm not laughing." "Was it Scott?" "Maybe. He was just here, after all." "Or Marcy?" Marcy was the only other person I could think of who might be thoughtless enough to carry this out. V looked sharply at me. "As a prank? Maybe." But was Marcy that cruel? And would she even go to the trouble? This was a lot more involved than a hurtful comment in passing. The note, the ring, even the delivery, that took planning. Marcy seemed like the kind of person who got bored after 5 minutes of planning. "Let's get to the bottom of this," V said, walking back toward the bakery doors. Once inside, she singled out Madeline. "We need to talk. What did the guy look like? Short, tall, brown hair, blonde?" "He was wearing a hat and sunglasses," Madeline answered, casting furtive glances at the other bakery workers, who were beginning to pay V some attention. "Why? What was in the envelope?" "You're going to have to do better than that," V said. "What exactly was he wearing? Was there a team logo on his hat? Did he have facial hair?"
"I don't remember," Madeline stammered. "A black hat, or maybe brown. I think he was wearing jeans."
"You think?" "Come on," I said, tugging V's arm. "She doesn't remember." I flicked my eyes to Madeline's. "Thanks for your help."
"Help?" V said. "She wasn't helpful. She can't go accepting envelopes from strange guys and not remember what they look like."
"She thought he was my boyfriend," I said. Madeline nodded vigorously.
"I did. I'm so sorry. I thought it was a present. Was it something bad in the envelope? Do you want me to call the police?"
"We want you to remember what the psychopath looked like," V shot back.
"Black jeans," Madeline blurted suddenly. "I remember he was wearing black jeans. I mean, I'm almost positive he was."
"Almost positive?" V said. I hauled her outside and down the boardwalk. After she'd had enough time to cool down, she said, "Babe, I'm so sorry about that. I should have looked in the envelope first. People are stupid. And whoever gave you that envelope is the stupidest of all. I'd happily ninja star them if I could." I knew she was trying to lighten the mood, but my thoughts were 5 steps ahead. I wasn't thinking about my dad's death anymore. We'd come to a narrow divide between shops, and I pulled her off the walk, wedging us between buildings. "Listen, I need to talk to you. Yesterday I thought I saw my dad, here at the pier." V stared at me, but said nothing.
"It was him, V. It was him."
"Babe," she began skeptically,
"I think he's still alive."
My dad's funeral had been closed casket. Maybe there'd been a mistake, a misunderstanding, and it wasn't my dad who'd died that night. Maybe he was suffering from amnesia, and that's why he hadn't come home. Maybe something else was preventing him. Or someone.
"I don't know how to say this," V said, looking up, down, everywhere but at me. "But he's not coming back."
"Then how do you explain what I saw?" I said defensively, hurt that she, of all people, didn't believe me. Tears stung my eyes, and I quickly brushed them away.
"It was somebody else. Some other guy who looks like your dad."
"You weren't there. I saw him." I didn't mean to snap, but I wasn't going to resign myself to the facts. Not after everything I'd been through. 2 months ago, I'd flung myself off the gym rafters at school. I knew I'd died. I couldn't deny what I remembered about that night. And yet I was alive today. There was a chance my dad was alive, too. Yesterday, I'd seen him. I had. Maybe he was trying to communicate with me, send me a message. He wanted me to know he was still alive. He didn't want me to give up on him. V shook her head.
"Don't do this."
"I'm not giving up on him. Not until I know the truth. I have to find out what happened that night."
"No, you don't," V said firmly. "Lay your dad's ghost to rest. Digging this up isn't going to change the past. It's going to make you relive it."
"Lay my dad's ghost to rest? What about me? How was I supposed to rest until I knew the truth?" V didn't understand. She wasn't the one whose father had been unexplainably and violently ripped away. Her family wasn't shattered. She still had everything. The only thing I had left was hope. I spent Sunday afternoon at Enzo's Bistro in the company of the periodic table of the elements, throwing all my concentration into homework, attempting to crowd out any thought of my dad or the envelope I'd received telling me the Black Hand was responsible for his death. It had to be a prank. The envelope, the ring, the note, it was all someone's idea of a cruel joke. Maybe Scott, maybe Marcy, but in all honesty, I didn't think it was either of them. Scott had sounded sincere when he'd offered his condolences to me and my mom, and Marcy's cruelty was almost always immature and spontaneous. Since I was seated at a computer and already logged in, I ran an internet search for the Black Hand. I wanted to prove to myself there was no validity in the note. Probably someone had found the ring at a second-hand store, come up with the clever name of the Black Hand, followed me to the boardwalk, and asked Madeline to hand the envelope to me. Looking back, it didn't even matter that Madeline couldn't remember what the guy looked like, because most likely he wasn't the person behind the prank. That person had probably stopped a random guy on the boardwalk and paid him a few dollars to deliver the envelope. That's what I would have done, if I were a sick, twisted person who got off on hurting other people. A page of links for the Black Hand popped up on the monitor. The first link was for a secret society that had reportedly assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand of Austria in 1914, catapulting the world into World War I. The next link was for a rock band. The Black Hand was also the name of a group of vampires in a role-playing game. Finally, in the early 1900s, an Italian gang dubbed the Black Hand took New York by storm. Not one link mentioned Maine. Not one image showed an iron ring stamped with a fist. See, I told myself, a prank. Realizing I'd strayed to the very topic I wasn't supposed to be thinking about, I pinned my eyes back on the homework spread out before me. I needed to get a grip on chemical formulas and calculating atomic mass. My first chemistry lab was coming up, and with Marcy as my partner, I was preparing for the worst by putting in extra hours outside of school to drag along her dead weight. I punched a few numbers into my calculator, then carefully transcribed my answer onto the open page of my notebook, repeating the answer loudly in my head to block out thoughts of the Black Hand. At 5, I called my mom, who was in New Hampshire. "Checking in," I said. "How's work going?" "Same old. You?" "I'm at Enzo's trying to study, but the mango smoothie keeps calling to me." "Now you're making me hungry." "Hungry enough to come home?" She gave one of those it's-out-of-my-control sighs. "I wish I could. We'll make waffles and smoothies for brunch on Saturday." At 6, V called and talked me into meeting her for spinning at the gym. At 7:30, she dropped me off at the farmhouse. I had just finished showering and was standing in front of the fridge hunting down the leftover stir-fry my mom had stored there yesterday before leaving when there was a loud knock at the front door. I squinted into the peephole. On the other side of the door, Scott Parnell made the peace sign. "Battle of the Bands," I said aloud, smacking my palm to my forehead. I'd completely forgotten to cancel. I looked down at my PJ pants and groaned. After a failed attempt at fluffing my wet hair, I turned the bolt and opened the door. Scott checked out my jammies.
"You forgot."
"Are you kidding? I've been looking forward to this all day. I'm just running a little late." I pointed over my shoulder at the staircase. "I'll get dressed. Why don't you reheat some stir-fry? It's in a blue Tupperware in the fridge." I took the stairs up two at a time, shut my bedroom door, and called V. "I need you to come over now," I said. "I'm on my way to Battle of the Bands with Scott." "Is the point of this call to make me jealous?" I put my ear to the door. It sounded like Scott was opening and closing cabinets in the kitchen. For all I knew, he was hunting for prescription drugs or beer. He was going to be disappointed on both counts, unless he had unrealistic hopes of getting high on my iron pills. "I'm not trying to make you jealous. I don't want to go alone." "So tell him you can't go." "The thing is, I kind of want to go." I had no idea where this sudden desire had come from. All I knew was that I didn't want to spend the night alone. I'd put in a full day of homework, followed by spinning, and the last thing I wanted was to stay home tonight and check off my list of weekend chores. I'd been good all day. Make that good my whole life. I deserved to have some fun. Scott wasn't the best date in the world, but he wasn't dead last, either. "Are you coming or not?" "I have to admit, it sounds a lot better than conjugating Spanish verbs in my room all night." I'll call Rickson and see if he wants to come, too.
I hung up and did a quick inventory of my closet. I decided on a pale silk cami, a miniskirt, opaque tights, and ballet flats. I sprayed perfume in the air and walked through it for a light, grapefruity scent. In the back of my mind, I wondered why I was spending the time to clean up for Scott. He was going nowhere in life. We had nothing in common, and most of our brief conversations included flipping insults at each other. Not only that, but Patch had told me to stay away from him. And that's when it hit me. Chances were, I was drawn to Scott because of some deep-rooted psychological reason involving defiance and revenge. And it all pointed back to Patch. As I saw it, I could do one of two things. Sit home and let Patch dictate my life, or ditch my Sunday school good girl self and have a little fun. And even though I wasn't ready to admit it, I hoped Patch found out I'd gone to Battle of the Bands with Scott. I hoped the thought of me with another guy drove him crazy. Mind made up, I flipped my head over, dried my hair just enough to give my curls definition, and breezed into the kitchen. "Ready," I told Scott. He gave me the second full-body scan of the night, but this time I felt a lot more self-conscious.
"Looks good, Gray," he said.
"Right back at you." I smiled, going for chummy, but I felt nervous, which was ridiculous, since this was Scott we were talking about. We were friends. Not even friends. Acquaintances.
"Cover charge is $10.
I stood there a moment. "Oh, right, I knew that. Can we stop by an ATM on the way?" I had $50 worth of birthday money sitting in my checking account. I'd already allocated the money to go toward the cabriolet, but it wasn't like withdrawing 10 was going to kill the deal. At the rate I was saving, I wouldn't be able to buy the cabriolet before my 25th birthday anyway. Scott tossed a main driver's license on the counter with my yearbook photo copied onto it.
"Ready, Marlene?"
"Marlene?"
"I wasn't joking about the fake ID. Not thinking of backing out, are you?"
He grinned like he knew exactly how many points my blood pressure had shot up at the thought of using illegal ID, and he'd bet all his money that I'd back out in 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2. I swiped the ID off the counter. "Ready." Scott drove the Mustang through the center of Coldwater to the opposite side of town, down a few winding back roads and across the railroad tracks. He pulled up in front of a 4-story brick warehouse overrun with weeds that twined up the exterior. A long line of people waited outside the doors. From what I could tell, the windows had been covered from the inside with black paper, but through the cracks between tape jobs, I saw the slice of a strobe light. A neon blue sign above the door glowed with the words, "The Devil's Handbag." I'd been to this section of town once before, in the 4th grade, when my parents drove me and V to a haunted house staged for Halloween. I'd never been to the Devil's Handbag, but I was certain just by looking at it that my mom would have rather I kept it that way. Scott's description of the place bounced up from my memory. Loud, unrehearsed music. Loud, unruly crowds. Lots of scandalous sex in the bathrooms.
"Oh, boy." "I'll let you out here," Scott said, steering to the curb. "Find us good seats, close to the stage in the center."
I climbed out and walked to the back of the line. In all honesty, I'd never been to a club that required a cover charge before. I'd never been to a club, period. My nightlife consisted of movies and Baskin-Robbins with V. My cell sang out V's ringtone. "I hear warm-up music, but all I see are train tracks and some abandoned boxcars." "You're a couple blocks away. Are you in the Neon or on foot?"
"In the Neon.
I'll come find you." I pulled out of the line, which was growing by the minute. At the end of the block, I rounded the corner, heading toward the tracks Scott had driven the Mustang across to get here. The sidewalk was cracked and uneven from years of disrepair, and with the streetlights placed few and far between, I had to watch my step to keep from snagging my toe and tripping. The warehouses down the block were dark, their windows vacant eyes. The warehouses gave way to abandoned brick townhouses splashed with graffiti. Over 100 years ago, this had probably been the hub of Coldwater. Not so anymore. The moon cast an eerie, translucent light on the graveyard of buildings. I folded my arms close to my body and walked faster. 2 blocks away, a form materialized out of the smoggy darkness. "V?" I called ahead. The figure continued toward me, head down, hands pocketed. Not V, but a man, tall and slender, with broad shoulders and a vaguely familiar gait. I didn't feel especially comfortable passing by a man alone on this stretch of sidewalk, and reached for my cell in my pocket. I was just about to call V and get her exact location when the man passed under a cone of streetlight.
He was wearing my dad's leather bomber jacket. I stopped short. Completely unaware of me, he climbed a set of steps to his right and disappeared inside one of the abandoned townhouses. The hairs on my neck rose. Dad? I broke into an automatic jog. I crossed the street without bothering to look for traffic, knowing there was none. When I made it to the townhouse, I was sure he'd entered. I tried the tall double doors. Locked. I shook the handles, rattling the doors, but they didn't give. Cupping my hands around my eyes, I peered through one of the windows flanking the door. The lights were off, but I could make out lumps of furniture covered in pale sheets. My heart was beating all over the place. Was my dad alive? All this time? Had he been living here? Dad! I called through the glass. It's me, Nora! At the top of the staircase inside the townhouse, his shoes vanished down the hall. Dad! I yelled, pounding the glass. I'm out here! I backed away, head tilted up, looking at the second-story windows, watching for his shadow to pass by. The back entrance. The thought floated to the surface of my mind, and I immediately acted on it. I jogged down the steps, slipping into the narrow passageway cutting between this townhouse and the next. Of course. The back door. If it was unlocked, I could get inside to my dad. Ice kissed the back of my neck. The chill tiptoed down my spine, momentarily paralyzing me. I stood at the end of the passageway, eyes fastened on the backyard. Bushes swayed docilely in the breeze. The open gate creaked on its hinges. Very slowly I backed away, not about to trust the stillness, not about to believe I wasn't alone. I'd felt this way before, and it had always signaled danger. Nora, we're not alone. Someone else is here. Go back! Dad? I whispered, my mind darting. Go find V. You need to leave. I'll find you again. Hurry! I didn't care what he said. I wasn't leaving. Not until I knew what was going on. Not until I saw him. How could he expect me to leave? He was here. A flutter of relief and nervous excitement bubbled up inside me, eclipsing any fear I felt. Dad, where are you? Nothing. Dad? I tried again. I'm not leaving. This time there was an answer. The back door is unlocked. I touched my head, feeling his words echo there. Something was different about his voice this time, but not noticeably enough to place a finger on it. Slightly colder, maybe? Sharper? Dad? I whispered at the faintest volume. I'm inside. His voice was louder now, a real sound. Not just in my head this time, but in my ears, too. I turned toward the house, certain he'd spoken through the window. Stepping off the flagstone path, I tentatively laid my palm on the window pane. I desperately wanted it to be him, but at the same time, the goosebumps popping up all over my skin warned me it could be a trick. A trap. Dad? My voice wavered. I'm scared. On the other side of the glass, a hand mirrored mine, 5 fingertips aligning with my own. My dad's gold wedding band was on the ring finger of his left hand. My blood pumped so hard I felt dizzy. It was him. My dad was inches away. Alive.
Come inside. I won't hurt you. Come, Nora.
The urgency in his words frightened me. I clawed at the window trying to locate the latch, desperately needing to throw my arms around him and stop him from leaving again. Tears streamed down my cheeks. I thought about running around to the back door, but I couldn't bring myself to leave him, even for a few seconds. I couldn't lose him again. I splayed my hand on the window, harder this time. I'm right here, Dad! This time, the glass frosted at my touch. Tiny fibers of ice branched across the glass with a brittle crackling noise. I jerked away at the sudden cold that shot up my arm, but my skin was stuck to the glass, frozen. Crying out, I tried to free myself using my other hand. My dad's hand melted through the window pane and closed around mine, holding me so I couldn't run. He jerked me roughly forward, the bricks snagging my clothes, my arm impossibly vanishing into the window. My terrified reflection stared back, my mouth open in a startled scream. The only thought pounding through my head was that this couldn't be my dad. Help! I yelled. V, can you hear me? Help! Thrashing my body side to side, I tried to use my weight to break free. A piercing pain sliced into the forearm he held captive, and an image of a knife burst into my mind with such intensity that I thought my head had split in two. Fire licked my forearm. He was cutting me open. Stop! I shrieked.
You're hurting me!
I felt his presence flex across my mind, his own sight eclipsing mine. There was blood everywhere, black and slippery, and mine. Bile rose in my throat.
Patch!
I screamed into the night with nothing short of terror and absolute desperation. The hand dissolved from around mine, and I dropped backward to the ground. Instinctively, I clutched my wounded arm against my shirt to stop the bleeding, but to my amazement, there was no blood, no cut. Gulping air, I stared up at the window. Perfectly intact, it reflected the tree behind me, which swung back and forth in the night air. I scurried to my feet and stumbled out to the sidewalk. I ran in the direction of the devil's handbag, turning to glance over my shoulder every few steps. I expected to see my dad, or his doppelganger, appear from one of the townhouses holding a knife, but the sidewalk stayed empty. I faced forward to cross the street and saw the person a half-blink before I slammed into her.
"There you are," V said, reaching out to steady me as I choked back a scream.
"I think we missed each other. I made it to the devil's handbag and backtracked to find you. Are you okay? You look ready to throw up." I didn't want to stand on the street corner any longer. Reflecting on what had just happened at the townhouse, I couldn't help but be reminded of the time I'd hit Chauncey with the neon. Moments later, the car had returned to normal, leaving no evidence of an accident. But this time, it was personal. This time, it was my dad. My eyes burned and my jaw quivered as I spoke. I thought I saw my dad again. V folded her arms around me.
Babe, I know. It wasn't real. It wasn't real, I repeated, trying to reassure myself.
I blinked several times in succession, tears staining my vision.
But it had felt real. So very real.
Do you want to talk about it? What was there to talk about? I was being haunted. Someone was messing with my mind, toying with me. A fallen angel? A Nephil? My dad's ghost? Or was it my own mind betraying me? It wasn't like this was the first time I'd imagined seeing my dad. I'd thought he was trying to communicate with me, but maybe this was a self-defense mechanism. Maybe my mind was making me see things I refused to accept were gone forever. It was filling the void, because that was easier than letting go. Whatever had happened back there, it wasn't real. It wasn't my dad. He would never hurt me. He loved me.
"Let's go back to the devil's handbag," I said, exhaling shakily. I wanted to distance myself from the townhouse as quickly as possible. Once more, I told myself that whoever I'd seen back there, he wasn't my dad.
The echoing clash, clang, and whine of drums and guitars warming up for the show grew louder, and while my panic was slow to subside, I felt my heartbeat slowing down. There was something reassuring about the idea of losing myself inside the swarm of hundreds of bodies packed inside the warehouse. Despite what had happened, I didn't want to go home, and I didn't want to be alone. I wanted to slip into the center of the crowd. There was strength in numbers. V grabbed my wrist and brought me to a halt.
"Is that who I think it is?"
Half a block up, Marcy Miller was climbing into a car. Her body looked poured into a little black scrap of fabric that was short enough to show off her black lace thigh highs and garter belt. Tall, over-the-knee black boots and a black fedora completed the outfit. But it wasn't her outfit that had caught my attention. It was the car. A shiny black Jeep Commander. The engine caught, and the Jeep pulled around the corner and out of sight. Chapter 9.
"Holy freak show," V whispered. "Did I just see that? Did I really just see Marcy climb into Patch's Jeep?"
I opened my mouth to say something, but it felt like someone had stuffed nails down my throat.
"Was it just me?" V said. "Or could you see her red thong peeking out from under her dress?"
"That wasn't a dress," I said, leaning back against a building for support.
I was trying to be optimistic, but you're right. That wasn't a dress. That was a tube top stretched down around her bony booty. The only thing keeping it from springing up around her waist is gravity.
"I think I'm going to be sick," I said, the nails in the throat sensation spreading to my stomach. V pushed down on my shoulders, forcing me to sit on a square of sidewalk.
"Deep breaths.
He's going out with Marcy." It was almost too horrific to believe.
"Marcy puts out," said V. That's the only reason. She's a pig. A rat. He told me there was nothing going on between them. Patch is a lot of things, but Honest isn't one of them. I blinked down the street where the Jeep had vanished. I felt the unexplainable urge to storm after them and do something I hoped I'd regret, like choke Marcy with her stupid red thong. This is not your fault, V said. He's the jerk who took advantage of you. I need to go home, I said, my voice numb. Just then a police cruiser came to a stop near the club's entrance. A tall, lean cop in black slacks and a dress shirt angled out. The street was heavily shadowed, but I recognized him immediately. Detective Basso. I'd fallen under the jurisdiction of his job once before, and I had no desire for a repeat performance, especially since I was fairly certain I wasn't on his list of favorite people. Detective Basso shouldered his way to the front of the line, flashed his badge at the bouncer, and walked inside without slowing.
Whoa, V said. Was that a cop?
Yes, and he's too old, so don't even think about it. I want to go home. Where did you park?
He doesn't look much over 30. Since when is 30 too old?
His name is Detective Basso. He questioned me after the incident with Jules at school. I loved how I kept referring to it as the incident, instead of what it really was, attempted murder.
Basso. I like that. Short and sexy, just like my name. Did he frisk you?
I gave her a sideways look, but she was still gazing at the door he'd gone through. No, he questioned me.
I wouldn't mind being handcuffed by him.
Just don't tell Rickson. Let's go. If the police are here, something bad is going to happen.
Bad is my middle name,
she said, linking her arm through mine and drawing me toward the warehouse entrance.
The... There are probably 200 people inside. It's dark. He's not going to pick you out of the crowd, if he even remembers you at all. Probably he's forgotten you. Besides, he's not going to arrest you. You're not doing anything illegal. Well, aside from the whole fake ID business, but everybody does that. And if he really wanted to bust the whole place, he'd have brought backup. One cop isn't going to take down this crowd.
How do you know I have fake ID? She gave me an I'm-not-as-dumb-as-I-look glance.
You're here, aren't you?
How are you planning to get in?
Same as you.
You have fake ID? I couldn't believe it. Since when? V winked.
Rickson is good for more than just kissing. Come on, let's go. Being the good friend you are, you wouldn't even think about asking me to break out of my house and violate the terms of my grounding for nothing, especially since I already called Rickson and he's on his way.
I groaned, but this wasn't V's fault. I was the one who'd thought coming here tonight was a good idea. 5 minutes, but that's it. The line was moving fast, pouring into the building, and against my better judgment, I paid the cover charge and followed V into the dark, sticky, deafening warehouse. In a way, it felt strangely good to be surrounded by darkness and noise. The music was too loud to think, which meant even if I'd wanted to, I couldn't concentrate on Patch and what he was doing with Marcy at this precise moment. There was a bar at the back, painted black, with metal bar stools and pendant lights that hung from the ceiling, and V and I slid onto the last two available stools.
ID?
The guy behind the bar asked. V shook her head.
Just a Diet Coke, please.
I'll take a Cherry Coke, I added. V poked my ribs and leaned sideways.
Did you see that? He asked to see our ID. How awesome is that?
I bet he wanted our names but was too shy to ask. The bartender filled two glasses and slid them down the counter, where they stopped directly in front of us.
That's a cool trick,
V shouted at him over the music. He gave her the finger and moved down the bar to the next customer.
He was too short for me anyway, she said.
Have you seen Scott? I asked, sitting tall on my stool to try to see over the crowd. He should have had plenty of time to park by now, but I didn't see him. Maybe he hadn't wanted to use metered parking and had driven farther out to find free parking. Still, unless he'd parked 2 miles away, and that seemed highly unlikely, he should have been here.
Uh-oh, guess who just walked in?
V's eyes were fixed over my shoulder and her expression darkened to a scowl.
Marcy Miller, that's who.
I thought she left. A jolt of anger fired through me. Is Patch with her?
Negative.
I squared my shoulders and sat even higher. I'm calm, I can handle it. Most likely she won't see us. Even if she does, she's not going to come over to talk. And even though not one part of me believed it, I added, there's probably some twisted explanation for why she got into his Jeep. Just like there's a twisted explanation for why she's wearing his hat. I flattened my hands on the bar and swung around. Sure enough, Marcy was elbowing her way into the crowd, her strawberry blonde ponytail streaming out the back of Patch's ball cap. If that wasn't evidence they were together, I didn't know what was. I'm going to kill her, I said to V, turning back to face the bar, gripping my cherry Coke, heat rising in my cheeks. Of course you are, and here's your chance. She's beelining this way. A moment later, Marcy ordered the guy beside me out of his seat and perched herself on top of it. She took off Patch's cap and shook out her hair, then pressed the cap to her face, inhaling deeply. Doesn't he smell amazing? Hey, Nora, V said, didn't Patch have lice last week? What is it? Marcy asked rhetorically. Fresh cut grass? An exotic spice? Or maybe mint? I set my glass down a little too hard and some of the cherry Coke sloshed onto the bar. That's really eco-friendly of you, V told Marcy, recycling Nora's old trash. Hot trash is better than fat trash, Marcy said. Fat this, V said, and she picked up my cherry Coke and underhanded it at Marcy. But someone in the crowd bumped V from behind, so instead of sailing straight at Marcy, the Coke spread out and splattered all three of us. Look what you did, Marcy said, jumping off her bar stool so hard she knocked it over. She swiped at the Coke in her lap. This dress is BB. Do you know how much it cost? $200. It's not worth that much anymore, V said. And I don't know what you're complaining about. I bet you shoplifted it. Yeah, so what's your point? With you, what you see is what you get. And I see cheap. Nothing says cheap like shoplifting. Nothing says fat like a double chin. V's eyes went slitty. You're dead. You hear me? Dead. Marcy shifted her eyes in my direction. By the way, Nora, I thought you'd like to know. Patch told me he broke up with you because you weren't enough of a slut. V smacked Marcy upside the head with her handbag. What was that for? Marcy shrieked, clutching her head. V smacked her other ear. Marcy staggered backward, eyes dazed but quickly narrowing. You little... she began. Stop! I shouted, wedging myself between them and holding my arms out. We'd drawn the attention of the crowd, and people were shuffling closer, their interest piqued by the prospect of a catfight. I didn't care what happened to Marcy, but V was a different matter. Chances were, if she got in a fight, Detective Basso would haul her down to the station. Combined with sneaking out of the house, I didn't think jail time would go over well with her parents. Let's all just back away. V, go get the neon. I'll meet you outside. She called me fat. She deserves to die. You said so yourself. V's breathing was ragged. How do you plan on killing me? Marcy sneered. By sitting on me? And that was when everything broke loose. V snatched her own Coke off the bar and raised her arm, aiming to throw. Marcy turned to run, but in her hurry tripped backward over her fallen bar stool and toppled to the floor. I swiveled to V, hoping to defuse any further violence, when my knee was kicked out from behind. I went down, and the next thing I knew, Marcy was on top, straddling me. This is for stealing Todd Barrow from me in fifth grade, she said, punching me in the eye. I yowled and grabbed my eye. Todd Barrow? I shouted. What are you talking about? That was the fifth grade. And this is for sticking that picture of me with a giant zit on my chin on the front page of the e-zine last year. That wasn't me. Okay, maybe I'd had a little say in the photo selection, but it wasn't like I was the only one. And anyway, Marcy was holding that over my head. Wasn't a year a little long to be clinging to a grudge? Marcy shouted, And this is for your whore of a... You're crazy! This time I blocked the hit and managed to grab the leg of the nearest barstool and overturn it on her. Marcy shoved the barstool away. Before I could get my feet under me, she swiped a drink from a passerby and doused me with it. An eye for an eye, she said. You humiliate me, I humiliate you. I wiped Coke out of my eyes. My right eye flowered with pain where Marcy had punched me. I felt the bruise spreading under my skin, tattooing me blue and purple. My hair was dripping Coke, my best camisole was torn, and I felt demoralized, beaten, and rejected. Patch had moved on to Marcy Miller, and Marcy had just punctuated the fact. My feelings were no excuse for what I did next, but they were definitely a catalyst. I had no clue how to fight, but I closed my hands into fists and clipped Marcy in the jaw. For a moment, her expression was frozen in surprise. She scooted off me, two-handing her jaw, gaping at me. Buoyed by my small victory, I lunged for her, but came up short because someone had me under the armpits, hauling me upright.
"Get out of here now," Patch said in my ear, dragging me toward the doors.
"I'm going to kill her," I said, fighting to get around him. A gathering crowd enveloped us, chanting, "Fight! Fight! Fight!" Patch brushed them out of the way and dragged me through. Behind Patch, Marcy got to her feet and flipped me her middle finger. Her grin was smug, her eyebrows high. The message was clear. Bring it on. Patch handed me off to V, then went back and clamped a hand around Marcy's upper arm. Before I could see where he took her, V wrestled me toward the nearest exit. We came out in the alley. Fun as seeing you fight Marcy was, I figured it probably wasn't worth the cost of you spending the night in jail, V said.
I hate her!
My voice still sounded hysterical. Detective Basso was plowing through the crowd when Patch lifted you off her. I figured that was my cue to step in.
Where did he take Marcy? I saw Patch grab her.
Does it matter? Hopefully they both get hauled downtown. Our shoes crunched through the gravel as we ran down the alley toward where V had parked. The blue and red lights of a patrol car sliced past the opening of the alley, and V and I pressed back against the warehouse.
Well, that was exciting, V said once we were locked inside the neon. Oh yeah, sure, I said through my teeth.
V licked my arm. You taste pretty good. You're making me thirsty, smelling like cherry coke and all.
This is all your fault, I said. You're the one who threw my coke at Marcy. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't have gotten in a fight.
Fight? You laid there and took it. You should have had Patch teach you some moves before you broke up with him. My cell phone was ringing, and I yanked it out of my purse.
What?
I snapped. When no one answered, I realized I was so worked up that I'd confused the text message chirp with an actual call. One unread message was waiting for me from an unknown number. Stay home tonight.
That's scary, V said, bending sideways to read. Who have you been giving your number to?
It's probably a mistype. It's probably meant for someone else. Of course, I was thinking about the townhouse, my dad, and the vision I'd had of him cutting open my arm. I tossed the cell into my open purse at my feet and bowed my head into my hands. My eye throbbed. I was scared, alone, confused, and on the verge of crying uncontrollably.
Maybe it's from Patch, V said.
His number has never shown up as unknown before. It's a prank. If only I could force myself to believe it. Can we go? I need Tylenol.
I think we should call Detective Basso. Police love this kind of scary stalker crap.
You just want to call him so you can flirt with him. V put the neon in gear.
Just trying to be helpful.
Maybe you should have tried being helpful 10 minutes ago when you threw my drink on Marcy.
At least I had the guts to.
I turned in my seat, giving her the full weight of my stare. Are you accusing me of not standing up to Marcy?
She stole your boyfriend, didn't she?
Granted, he scares the candy out of me, but if Marcy stole my boyfriend, there'd be hell to pay. I pointed a stiff finger at the street. Drive!
You know what? You really need a new boyfriend. You need a good old-fashioned makeout session to mellow you out.
Why did everyone think I needed a new boyfriend? I didn't need a new boyfriend. I'd had enough of boyfriends to last a lifetime. The only thing a boyfriend was good for was a shattered heart.
Chapter 10.
An hour later, I'd fixed and eaten a late snack of cream cheese frosting spread on graham crackers, tidied up the kitchen, and watched a little TV. In a shadowy corner of my mind, I hadn't managed to forget the text message warning me to stay home. It had been easier to brush off as a missed call or prank when I was safe and sound inside V's car, but now that I was alone, I wasn't feeling anywhere near as confident. I considered turning on some Chopin to break the silence, but I didn't want to handicap my hearing. The last thing I needed was someone sneaking up behind me.
Pull it together, I ordered myself. Nobody's sneaking up on you.
After a while, when nothing good was left on TV, I climbed upstairs to my bedroom.
My room was, for all intents and purposes, clean, so I color-coded my closet, trying to keep myself busy so I wouldn't be tempted to fall asleep. Nothing would make me as vulnerable as dozing off, and I wanted to delay it as long as possible. I dusted the top of the bureau, then alphabetized my hardcovers. I reassured myself that nothing bad was going to happen. Most likely, I'd wake tomorrow realizing how ridiculously paranoid I'd been. Then again, maybe the text was from someone who wanted to slit my throat while I slept. On an eerie night like this, nothing was too far-fetched to believe. Sometime later, I woke in the dark. The drapes on the far side of the room billowed as the electric fan oscillated toward them. The air temperature was overly warm, and my stretchy tank and boy briefs clung to my skin, but I was too caught up in envisioning worst-case scenarios to even think about cracking the window. Looking sideways, I blinked at the numbers on my clock. Just shy of 3. An angry pounding reverberated through the right side of my skull, and my eye was swollen shut. Turning on every light in the house, I padded barefoot to the freezer and assembled an ice pack out of ice cubes in a Ziploc bag. I braved a look in the bathroom mirror and groaned. A violent purple and red bruise flowered from my eyebrow down to my cheekbone. "How could you have let this happen?" I asked my reflection. "How could you have let Marcy beat you up?" I shook the last 2 Tylenol gel caps out of the bottle in the mirrored cabinet, swallowed them, then curled into bed. The ice stung the skin around my eye and sent a shiver through me. While I waited for the Tylenol to kick in, I wrestled with the mental picture of Marcy climbing inside Patch's Jeep. The image played, rewound, and replayed. I tossed and turned and even folded my pillow over my head to smother the image, but it danced just out of reach, taunting me. What must have been an hour later, my brain wore itself out thinking of all the inventive ways I'd like to kill both Marcy and Patch, and I slipped back into sleep. I woke to the sound of a lock rolling over. I opened my eyes but found my vision muddled by the same poor-quality black and white as when I'd dreamed my way into England hundreds of years ago. I tried to blink it away and bring my normal vision back, but my world stayed the color of smoke and ice. Downstairs, the front door eased open with a low-pitched creak. I wasn't expecting my mom home until Saturday morning, which meant it was someone else. Someone who didn't belong inside. I stole a look around the room for something I could use as a weapon. A few small picture frames were arranged on the nightstand, along with a cheap drugstore lamp. Footsteps trod softly over the hardwood floors of the foyer. Seconds later, they were on the stairs. The intruder didn't pause, listening for signs that they'd been heard. They knew exactly where they were going. Rolling silently out of bed, I snatched my discarded tights off the floor. I tightened them between my hands and pressed my back to the wall just inside my bedroom door, a clammy sweat beading my skin. It was so quiet I could hear myself breathe. He stepped through the doorway and I roped a leg of the tights around his neck, tugging back with all my strength. There was a moment of struggle before my weight jerked forward and I found myself face to face with Patch. He looked from the tights he'd confiscated to me. "Want to explain?" "What are you doing here?" I demanded, my breathing elevated. I put 2 and 2 together. "Was that your text earlier, the one telling me to stay put tonight? Since when do you have an unlisted number?"
"I had to get a new line. Something more secure."
I didn't want to know. What kind of person needed all that secrecy? Who was Patch afraid would be eavesdropping on his calls? The Archangels? "Did it ever occur to you to knock?" I said, my pulse still hammering. "I thought you were someone else."
"Expecting someone else?"
"As a matter of fact, yes. A psychopath who sent anonymous text messages telling me to make myself accessible."
"It's after 3, Patch said. "Whoever you're waiting for can't be that exciting. You fell asleep."
He smiled.
"You're still sleeping."
As he said it, he looked satisfied, maybe even reassured, as if something he'd been puzzling over had finally worked itself out. I blinked. Still sleeping? What was he talking about? Wait. Of course. That explained why all the color was drained, and I was still seeing in black and white. Patch wasn't really in my bedroom. He was in my dream. But was I dreaming about him, or did he actually know he was here? Were we sharing the same dream? "For your information, I fell asleep waiting for... Scott!" I had no idea why I'd said it, other than my mouth got in the way of my brain.
"Scott," he repeated.
"Don't start. I saw Marcy climb inside your Jeep."
"She needed a ride."
I adopted a hands-on-hips pose.
What kind of ride?
Not that kind of ride, he said slowly.
Oh, sure. What color?